ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Very special guest. We're almost stablemates now that you have your own show on the ABC, of course,
yes.
Which we'll get to. Australian comedian, of course, from Hamish and Andy fame. He's a media presenter in his own right. This is old hat for him, coming along and putting a headset on at the cricket. His name is Andy Lee. Andy, appreciate your time.
Yeah, I don't normally drink as much before broadcasting, but I've taken it easy this morning. Yesterday, we've got a crew that travel a lot, and there's 12 of us here. And we said, oh, look, let's just have a beer for every wicket. Now, that didn't... That wasn't a good idea yesterday.
19. I don't think you're anticipating that.
We didn't get that far. No, we became a bit sensible. But it's been I've been a hoot. My dad and my brother are over here. And, yeah, the first ball of an Ashes test. We were over in Birmingham last test. There's nothing like it.
So we get to chat to some very famous people in this segment during the lunch break, and it's a great thrill for us. And you,
apologies, we've dropped the standard here.
You absolutely belong in that category. But usually we go and find them in some corporate boxes somewhere or things like that. That's not your experience of the cricket. You're in the outer with the true punters.
Yeah, no, always in the outer. All footy, all cricket. It's the only place to watch it, I reckon. You know, have someone throw a beer on you, have some banter with a couple of Brits. We were up in their grill yesterday, and then the afternoon, gosh, they kept their receipts. So it's been really good fun.
What an up and down day yesterday. I was thinking of the British fans too, where imagine you make this long haul out to Australia.
Yeah.
And you'd be thinking all that 172, you'd be thinking, here we go again, and then trying to drown your sorrows. And then late in the day, you'd be thinking, this is what I came for.
They bowled so well, though. And they're extra nip. I was reading this morning that's their fastest lineup they've ever produced here in Australia, and they were all bowling over 140, and it was pretty difficult out there, wasn't it?
So who did you say you were here with? Your dad's here.
Dad, brother. We got 12 of us,
yep.
And it was so hard to get tickets.
Yeah.
I mean, the anticipation for this test was just remarkable. And so I did end up having to pull a few favours from Cricket Australia to grab another two because there were so many people who wanted to come. So we had 10 of us.
Wow.
And then we had another two that were kind of five rows back, but the 10 were in the sun and the two were in the shade. And we talked about the starting lineup of 10. It would have been more serendipitous if it was 11, if the starting 11, and then you had to spend some time in the twos, which is when you went back there. But, everyone wanted to be in the twos because it was in the shade. But at the change of innings, we decided to assign everyone with a player.
Yep.
And if you were in batting, you were up in the twos.
That's great.
So we're in a situation where we've got Usman and Weatherall, our mates assigned to that, up in the twos, and then getting really confused when we see Marnus come out because we have missed this whole memo. So one of my mates is running up to try and get into the twos. Weatherall wasn't there back very long, and suddenly he was back in the sun. And we didn't expect everyone to spend some time in the twos yesterday, but unfortunately, that's what happened as the Englishman went through the Aussies.
We know about your love for cricket. We've obviously seen your involvement with the Melbourne Stars, which we'll get to, and clearly by everything you've just described and the fact you're over here in Perth with 11 of your mates for the first test of the summer speaks to that. But where did it start? Do you remember back where you thought, well, why this grand old game? What drew you to it?
Oh, I've got my dad to thank for most of my love for all sports. Even... if it was a Rugby World Cup, I remember Dad just waking us up in the middle of the night and, we were probably five and my brother was eight, and he pulling us out and going, this is really important, you've got to watch this. And similar with Pat Cash, this is really important, you've got to watch this at all hours of the night. So we became sports lovers, and cricket was a big one of those. Just, I think it's ingrained in you, isn't it, from when your parents sit there and you watch every single ball, and it's the sound of the summer. That's where the love started. And there's no better experience to be able to travel with your old man and do it. That's what the part that I really love. So, last two Ashes over in England, Dad and my brother have come across, and we try and get to the first test, or at least Boxing Day, every time it comes back here.
Awesome. Favourite players growing up? Is it someone that stood out where you thought that's the guy I'm trying to be in the backyard?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I loved watching Matty Hayden go about it. Dean Jones before him, obviously being a Victorian, that was very important. But the problem for me, Corbin, was I was never allowed to be Australia because I had an older brother. So I learned all the West Indies very well.
Yeah.
So my brother was always Australia in the backyard. I was always the Windies because they were just a powerhouse at the time. I'm not sure if they're getting selected by the young kids today as the second one in. But so I'd be Ambrose or Walsh, or even just before that, Joel Garner. And then if I was batting, I was Clive Lloyd. And I'd borrow my dad's glasses as I kind of walked out there just to look the part.
That's awesome. We used to play in the cul-de-sac against my cousin, and we would have Australia and Australia A. I was the younger one, so I was always Australia A. So he'd pick his whole team, and then my team would be filled of, you know, Ryan Campbell and all these kind of guys that I'd be Australia A. So they would soon become my my favourite players as much as
any
other.
Well, if you recall, I mean, I remember when the Australia A idea came into play, and it was the reverse jersey or uniform. So the Aussies were in the green, the yellow predominantly, and a bit of green, and Australia A was in the green and a little bit of yellow. But they were so exciting, Australia A.
Yep.
It became a bit of a problem, I remember, for Cricket Australia, because I was going to the MCG barracking for Australia A, because there's these young guys. Yep. I think Ponting might have been in Australia A to begin with, and Di Menuto, and there's pretty candy players.
There was nothing more Australian than supporting the underdog, was it?
Yeah, so exactly.
All of a sudden, the main team that had very little support. You pulled on the green with the Melbourne Stars. You went by the title of Chief Hydration Officer at the Stars. We saw you running out there and doing just that, providing drinks. But what else did the role entail, and how did that come about that you were so heavily involved in the Melbourne Stars?
Strange one, because people won't recall this, but they thought celebrities might play in the first BBL.
Yes.
And so I was a listed player for the first ever BBL, but then they were so good.
Yeah.
The game got, and the competition got so serious, because they thought it was going to be a bit more of a circus. But yeah, the games are so good. So quickly it was discussed that I was never ever going to be on the field. It was Warnie, the late great Warnie, who rang me and said, "Hey mate, I'd love you to be a part of this team. You might not bowl or bat, but we'll definitely get you on the field." And Warnie was always cheekily trying to run off to have a cigarette and get me on. And Greg Shippett, the coach at the time, was like, no, he's not going on at all. But it was fun. So I was single at the time and just loved cricket. And so I could travel with the team and didn't have any dependents and just train all summer and then head to all games. And I became more of a glorified water boy than a player and ended up just loving it and doing it for 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Australian comedian Andy Lee, my guest on Grandstand at Lunch, with England 1 for 59, a lead of 99 runs.
It was a controversial move from the Stars, because I was always the last person to speak to them before they went out. And this is from Shippard on to Stephen Fleming, who was the coach after that, and Dave Hussey. They would have their meeting and then I would present to them and do the last speech in the rooms before they went out for every single game. Normally it was a song. I'd bring the guitar along and just sing something. I had Bible readings that I used to do, which I'd sub out a number of those people in the Bible for the players in our team. And no wonder we haven't won one yet.
I won't mention which cricketer, but Ben Cameron, our executive producer, his local cricket team, they used to always have an autobiography written by a former Australian player who was big on sort of motivational quotes. And a member of the team would read a passage of the book before the team went out to the ground. Which
I put more work into those than anything I was doing in my life. I had slide presentations and all sorts of things going on.
Matt, when did the optimism get killed that you were a chance to, you realised you weren't going to play? Like, surely you would have been attending net sessions and thinking, I'm a huge show here.
Well, we had Lasse Malinga. I'm not sure, I'm sure that the listeners out there, they're all huge cricket fans, so they'll remember Lasse Malinga, who was the Sri Lankan fast bowler, who real sidearm action, so peculiar. But he'd come to training and he would bowl seven balls tops. He'd come in, Malinga the slinger, he'd come in, he'd sling in two fast Yorkers, one slow ball Yorker, two bouncers, one slow ball bouncer. That was his six. And then he'd choose which one he just wanted to refine a little bit more. Seven balls gone, straight to the massage table, and he'd just sit there and get a long massage. So by the time the other batsmen would come in, particularly the tail enders, there were no bowlers left that wanted to bowl them, because they'd done their piece. So I ended up bowling to a lot of tail enders, and Clint Mackay and I had a fairly good battle.
What did you bowl?
Oh, slow. Compared to these guys, slow. I used to think I had a bit of hops, but nah. It's amazing, though. You bowl into someone like a Clint Mackay, you can get him out. And he wouldn't mind me saying that. But then the different level to bowling like Glenn Maxwell, Brad Hodge, where they could hit it anywhere. And Maxi was really interesting. As he'd come in to bowl, he'd go, hey, where's your field? Where's your field? And I'd have to tell him exactly where my field is. And then he'd just hit it exactly where they weren't.
Which goes to show how he's how his mind computes and how quickly he processes the information, thinks, okay, fine, that's, I'll hit it there and there.
Yeah, at one point I said, you need four off the last ball. He goes, where's your field? I said, I've got everyone on the offside. Everyone completely rings next, thinking I'm just going to bowl it so far wide and he won't be able to hit it. And to his hand eye, he hit it between, he stepped to the right and then hit it between his legs, slapped it between his legs, and I thought I was coming in with some pace. Incredible. They're out to square leg for a four.
He's they're special players. There's no doubt about that. Andy Lee with me during the lunch break, grandstand at lunch on ABC Sport. Golf.
Yep.
The topic of the day. Usman Khawaja missing yesterday, but won the comp at Karrinup.
Yes.
Which we've discussed a lot. We're going to leave that to one side. But you are a keen golfer.
Yep.
Have you played golf with any members of the Australian cricket team or any notable cricketers?
Plenty. Plenty, actually. Yeah. I mean, Ian Botham's the one that always wants to play golf. I mean, if he's not here commentating every day, he'll be on a golf course somewhere. So I've played a bit with Beefy and used to play a lot with Warnie, and I play a lot with Pat Cummins now and Mitch Stark and Abbott. And, I mean, the guys love it. Love the golf. It's got to be a balance, though.
Who hits them the best?
Not Cummo, and he'd be fine with me saying that. Certainly not Paddy. He takes the least time over it, that's for sure.
Right.
He'll be mid-anecdote and then just stop and whack it and goes an absolute mile. So he's fun to play with. Pretty laconic, kind of the way he approaches his cricket. Stark, he's got a beautiful action and obviously being a left-hander and can hit the ball with those levers an extremely long way. Glenn Maxwell, good player. I think he's off about two. And Dan Christian's down to scratch. Play with Dan Christian, doesn't name another cricketer. Warnie was always fun, always there and thereabouts, off about 10 to 12, but just loved gambling on the games. And I don't like gambling. But he just needed something on it. I think that was it. And if there was something on it, that's where he kind of lifted and he was clutch. You realise whenever he was in trouble and why he was such a good cricketer, it felt like he needed those moments to be able to do it. And to jump sideways from cricketers to tennis players, I was playing in the Australian Open Pro-Am with Leighton Hewitt, Jason Day, Ed Jenkins from the Rugby Nines captain and myself in a four. And Hewitt was the same. Whenever we needed him back to the wall, he could do it. And I said, well, what is this? What is it about your side? He said, I went through so many sports psychologists going, why do I need to be two sets down to actually start playing? Because we ended up playing three... PC, he ended up playing on most tournaments about 40% more than everyone else to get there because he had to wait until he was up against the wall. And we had this clutch putt on 14 and he put it in, we needed him. And I said, Hewitt, that should have been the time where you did the come on and you put your hands to your eyes. And he said, I know when to do the come on. I said, you do in tennis, but not golf. You're not very good at this game. And then coming down 18... he chipped it in out of the bunker in front of 200 people, turns to me and goes, come on.
That's awesome. We did see a photo bob up on social media of you and Pat Cummins, who obviously you're great mates with. Mm. And then a mutual friend of ours in Luke Ball, who, of course, Collingwood Premiership player. I saw the three of you in a photo together. How do all three of you know each other and how did that come about?
Bally and Paddy and I catch up pretty regularly. We met actually through a leadership course about 6 years ago. I'm not even sure we were meant to talk about that or not, but anyway, there you go. And so, a kind of a peer-to-peer leadership course. And Bally's incredible, obviously, what he did in the sport, on the footy field, and what he's doing now in finance. And we caught up and they've been really good people in our lives to, if something's kind of big on you, whether it's at work or at home, and someone you can connect and go, hey, what would you do in this situation? So that's how that connection started, and now we're mates.
Awesome. That's a great backstory. He's a good man, Luke Ball, part of the award-winning AFL Saturday on ABC Sport.
And I should point out that I don't want to claim any of Pat's leadership skills. I haven't passed on an iota of good advice to him. That's all him.
You're an award-winning and best-selling author. Mm. It's fair to point out as well, of course, for Do Not Open This Book, which is a tremendous children's book series, but it's come to life.
Yes.
Must be said as a television show, as Do Not Watch This Show, which is on the ABC premiered in July, but it is available on iView, so if you've missed it, you can catch up on all of that. How did it all go?
Oh, it's been unbelievable. Yeah, so much fun. I never really expected to be... I'm an accidental author. I never expected to be a children's book author. I wrote a book for my sister, well, my nephew. He was turning one, my sister's son, and it was only meant to be one book, one singular book. It was a test book that I made up because my mate from high school is a publisher. And then he said, hey, can we publish these? And I said, no, it's just meant to be a present. And he hassled me for a while, and I eventually gave in. And so we published them, and then suddenly they're all around the world, and we've just done the 11th book in the series.
Yeah.
And, the next natural step was an animation adaptation, and we launched that in July. I watched this show.
I heard you say it's the biggest creative challenge that you've had. Is that true in retrospect, given, I know you felt that way leading into it.
Yeah, absolutely, because, I mean, the book's pretty simple. It's about a monster that doesn't want you to get to the end of the book because something will happen to him if you do, and he keeps saying don't turn the page. And then with the animation, to try, that's really interactive, to try and keep the animated show interactive and the kids feel like he's actually talking to them was really challenging. And I also thought that there'd be a lot of transferable skills between, you know, studio-based shows or the shows Hamish and I did, and it turns out, no, animation's really, really different. So I had the L plates on for a long time, but it was six years it took to get it up and running.
Yeah, it's awesome. Congratulations on that. You can watch it on iView. There's a bunch of cameos too. I know Hamish appears in it at one stage. Good mate of ours, a former colleague of mine, Tony Armstrong.
Yes.
I know he gets a cameo as part of it as well, so you can catch it through ABC iView. Do not watch this show, and of course the books that go along with it. Mm. Old Mates.
Yes.
A pub in New York, which I understand you have an involvement with as a part owner. You're wearing the hat at the moment. It's a city that I love and have been lucky enough to go on a number of occasions. Where did the inspiration come from to start an Australian pub in Manhattan?
Sport was the reason. The last Australian pub that you could watch sport in, or the Aussies go about their work, closed down during COVID. So I was back in New York. I love it, and I was like, we can't watch the footy, can't watch the cricket. What's going on here? And talked to a couple of mates and said, we need to solve this problem. And so, you know, thankfully they're really good operators, and went about looking for a site, and then we're discussing, you know, how we raise the money. And so it could be funny to ask iconic Australians whether they'd fund it and just put money in for it. So that was my job, and, you know, the bat single went out, and I started with Paddy Cummins and Haim, and Mick Fanning actually was the first person to go. I mean, I called Fano, said, hey mate, there's no place that Aussies to get together over in the States, and, you know, one of the biggest cities in the world. We need to fix this. He's like, I'm in. I was like, oh, great. Told him the money, you know, it's all silent partners. He goes, that's all right. I was like, well, do you want me to put me in touch with your finance guys? And he goes, you're talking to him.
How good.
Like, good on you, mate. So his money came in quick, and then there's Ash Barty and Paddy Mills in there, and seven of us, and everyone was meant to be silent partners, and it's going so well, they're happy to put their names to it now, so that's been pretty good. Funnily enough, the first Ashes test was yesterday, so we're at the pub and we had it on, and it was just heaving, and any pom that came in, the whole pub turned on them and said, get your own pub, get your own bloody pub.
I went to the old one, actually, that, as you said, closed down, and we were watching the first day of an Ashes test there, going back a couple of series ago, and this woman walked in who had been to the ice hockey. She was of Russian heritage, and she turned to Ben and I and said, how come the score's in fractions? Which I thought was a fair question. I was like, there's something I hadn't considered before. 1 for 59, by the way, is the score at lunch here. We've got just about through the whole interview. I haven't even asked you about Hamish, which you usually get asked about, obviously, in just about every single
interview. I think he's eyeing off Adelaide.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's eyeing off Adelaide to go to that one. I asked him to come to this one, but he had some work. So, unfortunately, he misses due to injury. But we'll get him back in for another test soon.
Quick answer here. Carlton are playing in the grand final. Siren's about to go for the opening bounce. First ball of the Ashes starts at exactly the same time. What are you watching?
Gee, I'm going to have to go watch Carlton because they're never going to get to a grand final. Seems like a rarer thing.
I've loved your home renovations, which we've been following on social media. And my last question has to be, have you got a dollar?
Oh, yes, I do, mate. If you know, you know, but here you go, Corbin.
Oh, I love it.
I started with $35 and I'm down to my last four on the walk in here. For people who don't know, if you see Hamish and I are in the flesh and you listen to the podcast, we're a reverse subscription model. Not many podcasters do it, but we give you a dollar for listening, not the other way around.
Andy, it's been a great thrill.
Hey,
enjoy the cricket.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks for coming up. The great Andy Lee with me during the lunch break.